Well, the president of the United States, Joe Biden, he's got a pulse, folks. He's got a pulse. He was late to the State of the Union address on Thursday night, but he did manage to slur his way through the address for, I guess, the third time now. And so that, of course, is proof that he is not demented, that he is totally intact mentally. He's very, very healthy, healthy as an ox, because he did what every president is supposed to do each year with the State of the Union. Look, I'm going to bring on Dr. Carol Lieberman in just a little bit here to discuss. You know, she's a board-certified psychiatrist, so she's going to weigh in on her thoughts about what she saw in that performance on Thursday night. But I've got a lot of clips I want to get into, and poor Mr. Producer here, he probably saw these clips come in. He's thinking, you know, every time you give me 13 of these clips or 15 of these clips, you know, you get through six of them. But I'm going to do my best to honor him. So what we watched was an old senile guy screaming. And I'm convinced, by the way, Joe Biden, this screaming thing that he always does, I think that he does it because he thinks that he associates that, I believe, really, he associates that with youth. So he's going to convince people that he's not old, he's not losing his mind by screaming, because that's what young people do, I guess. I mean, I'm just convinced at this point. But while I do want to get into some of these things, because Joe Biden, I don't think he said a single thing that was actually true during this State of the Union address. And it shouldn't be surprising, I guess, because the worst president in American history, Joe Biden, delivered the worst State of the Union address in American history. That's what we saw. It was not a State of the Union address. It was a campaign speech. It was divisive. You know, he was going to come in and unite everybody. That's a bunch of baloney. And what you saw on display was overt Marxism. Who was the audience, by the way? I mean, I don't know how many of you actually watched the State of the Union. Probably every show has addressed the State of the Union in some way, like I'm doing now, so you've probably heard enough things about it. But who was the audience? It was not the American people. It wasn't the American people. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go out of order here. Cue up cut, let's see. It's number 12. I actually want to play this because Fox went in a diner and interviewed an actual American. You know, a normal person out there that's going to be voting, that's concerned about the world, that lives in reality, that's not in the Washington, D.C. bubble, that's actually affected by this Biden administration's devastating policies. Play cut 12.
Who you started watching the speech last night, but you said you actually had to turn it off, right?
Yes, I watched it for about 10, 15 minutes, and he was giving me a headache, hollering everything. But I tried to hear his side of it. My big three things are the inflation has to come down. You got to start prosecuting criminals, and we got to close up our border and make people come in legal. That's what I want.
All right, Michael, thank you so much.
Well, there you have it. Inflation, prosecuting criminals, and securing the border. All three things that Joe Biden and his administration, via their policies, they're directly responsible for aggravating, for exacerbating, and frankly, for creating these problems to begin with. And Joe Biden's not going to address any of those things. Now, we saw some propaganda, the same crap we've seen recently about the border bill lies and so on and so forth. But that's an actual American. And Joe Biden wasn't speaking to this person. He was speaking to, I guess, single women on antidepressants. I think that must have been his audience last night. I can't think of anybody else that he's talking to. But he was speaking to the radical base of the Democrat Party. And I should point out, because you can probably hear it, there's no hiding it. You see, Joe Biden, they can pump him full of amphetamines and roll him out late to give the State of the Union address, reading a teleprompter. And they can pretend in their minds and tell us via the media, the propagandists, that, oh, see, nothing to see here. He's healthy. Look at him. But you can't really hide it. And it was exposed also during the State of the Union last night. So look, I'm sick. I came down with something. Really big pain in the butt. Got to be honest with you. And my wife, she said, you're going to do the show? I said, of course I'm going to do the show. It's the Drew Allen Show. I have to do the Drew Allen Show. It's only on Saturdays. I'm not going to miss the show. But you look, you know, I mentioned this because in some weird way, I had this insight into Joe Biden. Now, hear me out. So, I had to prescribe myself some kind of regimen in terms of Mucinex or whatever the medications were. you know, not cocaine like Hunter Biden, you know, but you know, Mucinex or whatever it was, Zyrtec, these things, you know, and to do this show at a time where I felt like, okay, I was going to be at my best because I wake up in the morning and I'm just like sick as a dog. And then you get towards the end of the day and you kind of decline again with whatever I have, whether it's a cold, sinusitis, COVID, who knows. But anyway, I had to do that. I had to plan that to get through this show. And I'm very happy to be here. Don't mistake me. I'm not looking for sympathy. But what I'm telling you is what I experienced today, having to go through this regimen to make sure I could get through the show with some assistance. This is Joe Biden every single day. His whole life is being in this state that I'm currently in temporarily because of being sick. And so every time he goes to make one of these appearances, every time he's asked to do his duty, they have to pump him full of amphetamines or whatever it is. This is the perpetual state that Joe Biden is living in. And he is not fit for duty. He is not fit to serve. And frankly, watching this audience and their reactions to Joe Biden last night too, it was very much like the Truman Show. But it's like everyone's in on this joke. Not only did they, let's see, it is March 8th, 2024, and the Democrats still stole the 2020 election, by the way. But we're living in this fantasy land where everyone acts like he's the president occasionally around him. Oh, yeah, Joe Biden, he's got all his wheels turning. Oh, yeah, Joe Biden, yeah, he's great. They go on the media, Joe Scarborough. I've never seen a guy like this smart. He's in his prime. He's never been better, and so on and so forth. But anyway, I just want to share that with you. Cue up cut one, though. If you only saw one thing from the pathetic propaganda-laden State of the Union address, it would be this clip. And Laken Riley, of course, was the jogger murdered by a Venezuelan illegal who had been released back into to the U.S. By ICE per this administration's policies. Well, this exchange will tell you everything you need to know about Joe Biden and the Democrat Party. Go ahead, cut one.
Laken Riley, an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. That's right. But how many of thousands of people being killed by illegals?
Well, the obvious thing to you, who has a couple of brain cells to rub together, otherwise you wouldn't be watching this show, is that he said Laken Riley. He did not even get her name wrong. It's Laken Riley. Laken Riley, of course, is the current head coach of the football team at USC. So he's a football coach, and he says Laken Riley. Now, you'd think maybe the Democrats would be upset because, hey, this is an embarrassing moment for him. Right? He didn't get the name wrong. This is really humiliating. This looks very bad. It shows how out of touch he is. You'd think they'd be upset about that, perhaps. But no, think again. The Democrats were upset, but not because he didn't know Laken Riley's name. They're upset because he referred to these killers as illegals, which they are. Now, cue up cut two. Here's Nancy Pelosi commenting on that moment at the State of the Union.
Dan.
Now, you should have said undocumented, but that's not a big thing, okay? What's the big thing about
it? I actually wasn't even going to ask about that. I was just going to ask more about the moment, but you do think that he should have said undocumented? That wasn't going to be my question.
Well, we usually say undocumented. Uh-huh. He said.
Can you believe it? He just botched the name of a woman who was murdered because of his policies, and they're upset because he referred to the killer as an illegal, which the person was. They are. He's undocumented. I mean, isn't it unbelievable the games these people play? These people, they need some documentation. Yes. Let's just give them some documentation. That's the only thing wrong with these people. The 10 million people who've come in here illegally under the Biden administration? No. The problem isn't that they violated the law. They just need some documentation. They're undocumented. Unbelievable. It makes your blood boil. Now, cue up cut three here. This is CNN commenting again on the same thing. This drove the left nuts. Go ahead.
There has been at least one Democrat that has criticized it. Joaquin Castro has said, like, this using that word and illegal dehumanizing is problematic. What did you make of that?
That's probably true. He probably should have used a different word, and I think he would know that.
Oh, yes, yes. It's just dehumanizing when you call someone an illegal because they're here illegally. You know, I mean, it's not like ultra MAGA. You know, that's not meant to dehumanize anybody, right? The ultra MAGA, far right, super duper uber MAGA people. Now, cue up cut four. Now, this is Jake Tapper, who apparently didn't get the memo. But I just want you to think about this in the context, because Jake Tapper is going to comment on the fact that basically Joe Biden got through this speech. But I want you to think about this. The president of the United States is supposed to be mentally equipped for the job, right? I think that's a no-brainer. So think of how low the expectations are for the presidency based on Joe Biden. Cut four, go.
His presentation, his enunciation, of course, is not as clear as it once was a decade or two ago. His mind did seem fairly sharp. He ad-libbed a response to a pretty harsh moment and some heckling about the tragic murder of UGA student Lakin Riley. He got her name wrong. He called her Lincoln Riley, but as a general note, he condemned her murder, which was something that people were talking about.
Well, so Jake Tapper didn't get the memo in time to condemn him for using the word illegal. But it's worth pointing out that Joe Biden did acknowledge. I mean, think about how dismissive he was with her murder. Anyway, he basically said, actually play the clip because it's worth playing again. Play cut one more time.
Lincoln Riley. An innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. That's right. But how many of thousands of people being killed by illegals?
But how many of thousands are killed by illegals? So in other words, it doesn't matter. Her death doesn't matter because so many people are killed by illegals. I mean, what is he saying there? You know, when it comes to death by guns, when the gun is responsible, right, supposedly, you know, we've got to confiscate the guns because, you know, every life is so important. But anyway, here he is. Oh, how many people are killed? I mean, it's kind of a crazy admission because he's saying right there that we have a serious problem. How many thousands are killed by illegal? Yes, Joe, exactly. That's our point. Not just from fentanyl, but from murders like this that are happening across the United States every single day. And of course, they're doing nothing to resolve and solve the border crisis. But they did push out that propaganda again, which again is based on talking points that come from, you know, a focus group study they did. They paid somebody the third way or whatever it was. I forget. I talked about last week. They told them how to frame this issue, how to try and blame Republicans for the border issue, border crisis. And of course, all he has to do is put back in place the same policies that he rescinded when he came into office. This is outrageous that we're pretending like it takes an act of Congress to secure the border. That's actually the job of the government. That's the job of the president of the United States. That's a constitutional duty to protect our sovereignty and prevent an illegal invasion. That is actually your role. All this other crap, the freebies and the government handouts and the welfare, none of that is in the Constitution. None of that is a requirement of the federal government's role. But we live in an era, of course, where the federal government doesn't do anything that it's required to do and does everything that it's not supposed to do. That's where we are. And this is the fundamental problem in America. This is the war that we're engaged in, which is what America are we going to be? Are we going to reclaim our destiny, that which the founding fathers just heroically and brilliantly set forth for us, which states that we the people are master and those in government are servant? Or are we going to embrace this regressive view that those in government are our superiors, that our rights are not unalienable, that they instead come from the government, come from Joe Biden? That is not America. And so we are in a fight for the soul of the nation, as Joe Biden would have said during his campaign. But of course, they've got it wrong. They're not the heroes. They're the villains. And the American people are suffering. And if you look around that room, you know, cue up cut nine. I want you to see... It's like the Jumbotron at a sporting event. But Mayor Pete made it on camera last night during the speech. And I just want you to see these out of touch losers. These guys are losers. They're unaccomplished. They are our inferiors. We are being ruled by our inferiors who are less accomplished than us, less intelligent than us in every way. And so here's what you have, Mayor Pete. This sums up D.C. in a nutshell. Cut 9, go.
And by the way, I noticed some of you strongly voted against it, or they're cheering on that money coming in. I like it. I'm with you.
You see how these people are? Just, this is Mayor Bobblehead, Pete, and he's in on it. He's got his little cushy position as the transportation secretary. He's never worked in logistics. He's never worked in any of these types of things before. He's actually a miserable failure, of course, as a transportation secretary. I mean, I tried to think, actually, the other day, Mayor Pete, who has no experience in this, like, what is his day actually like? Does he go into work? I mean, what is his agenda? He knows nothing about transportation. He doesn't know anything about management of these things. Like, what does he do as the boss when he goes into work every day? I mean, does he know how the rail system works? Does he know anything about, airplanes and these complex systems that are in place? It's crazy. I mean, who's running the Department of Transportation? I mean, he can't be because he doesn't know. He doesn't have the experience. But this is Washington, D.C. You just bring in these people, you give them these jobs. I mean, somebody else, I guess, the permanent bureaucrats are still there doing this kind of thing. But there's Mayor Pete, the bobblehead. Just, oh, yes, yes, yes. I mean, it's just the joke is on us. And you think the enemies, all of our enemies aren't watching the State of the Union and just laughing hysterically at how pathetic we are as a nation because of these individuals who have hijacked our country? But anyway, I want to bring in, do we have her? Dr. Kara Lieberman here, board certified psychiatrist. What's that? Okay. All right. So in just a second, we're going to bring in Dr. Kara Lieberman. I was a little bit ahead here. But look, she's been on Fox News and everywhere. And like I said, she's a board certified psychiatrist. And she's going to tell us and weigh in on what she observed with the Biden administration and Joe Biden's performance. I'm very keen to ask her if she is convinced to change her mind, basically, about Joe Biden and what we've observed in the past. Did this performance, did the amphetamines, did it convince her and other Americans that, hey, Joe Biden, he's really on top of his game. We've been wrong all this time. Dr. Kara Lieberman, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Okay, well, I'm glad you're here. I really wanted somebody who's an expert in this to weigh in. And I guess, so you watched the State of the Union last night, and did your opinion change? Did it convince you that Joe Biden is in command of his faculties, that he is, in fact, in his prime?
Well, you know, I have been saying, warning people about his dementia since 2020 when he was in his basement. And I called it encroaching dementia, and it has been encroaching ever since. And we saw it last night. We saw it in a slightly different way because he was, I call it word salad on speed. You know, word salad is one of the symptoms of dementia. He's been showing this, which really has to do with words being tossed around, you know, and they don't make sense. And he was certainly showing that last night. You know, it's like cognitive dissonance. People were trying intently to understand what he was saying, you know, wanted to understand. And so you kind of think, you kind of put the words in yourself, you know, to try to connect things. But really, it was word salad, and he showed a lot of other signs of dementia as well.
Yeah, it does seem like there's always some kind of cutoff for him, right? So he kind of starts in there, he's a little bit stronger, and his time obviously wears on in the speech. He starts to slur a little bit more, and so on and so forth. Do you have I don't know if you've talked about this before or not, but, you know, people suggest that they're pumping him full of, you know, this and that, maybe amphetamines. I mean, do you have any insight into kind of what you could inject into somebody to help them?
Well, yeah, I mean, the most common thing, likely thing, would be Adderall. And one of the things that was interesting was that it seems like it takes some time, and it's different in different people, but it takes a certain amount of time to take effect. And you know how he was late, and they were blaming on the protesters, pro-Palestinian protesters. Now, of course, you know, there were protesters, but I wonder if they were trying to get him to a point where it was taking more effect. Because, you know, when he walked in, and it was like he was at a cocktail party. You know, he was chatting with everyone. And I know that, you know, the presidents generally do that to some degree. But people were clapping forever. And then finally, somebody said, four more years. And that kind of woke him up from his daze. Oh, yes, I'm supposed to give a speech now. It was like he was sort of delaying it. And, you know, I think that there's no way that a person, any person, could go from being a bumbling, quiet man like Biden has been, you know, making all his gaffes, they're not gaffes, they're signs of dementia, from his confabulation, you know, where if you can't remember something or you don't know the answer to something, you sort of make something up, and to the end when he was disoriented even last night. You know, he never knows once he finishes reading the teleprompter, oh, where am I supposed to go? And, you know, the thing is with dementia, there's sundowning, which means that the later in the day it gets, the more confused the person gets. And so there was, you know, when you have the State of the Union at 9 p.m. where he is, then he that's a time that he would be normally more confused.
Well, that's a great point. And something I have to do some research on and look up is, let's look at his official White House schedule on Friday. You know, what happened after he gave it all on Thursday? You know, was he missing all day on Friday, you know, to recover from this thing? But, you know, I mean, I was kind of joking earlier because you can maybe hear a little bit of sickness in me. And I was saying I actually did have insight kind of into this Biden situation in the sense that to get ready to do this show right now, I had to take certain medicines and stuff at a certain time because I wanted to be able to get through it because of coughing and things like that. And I was just kind of observing that that's Joe Biden's constant state. So anytime he's supposed to get out there and do anything, they've got to plan this routine to make sure he can get through it. And it's amazing that the Joe Biden that did show up last night at the State of the Union, he was far from perfect, certainly screaming like an angry elderly man, certainly, but he was definitely more on point than previous appearances, and it makes no sense.
Well, okay, yes, to some degree, but I mean, he was louder than on previous appearances, yeah. But there were other things, some subtle things, like, for example, his words weren't matching his tone. I mean, the way that he was reacting to what he was saying didn't match. And there was the woman doing the sign language, and her emotions, you know, were matching more what he was talking about. And he was just reading. He was basically just reading loudly and quickly. And his fans ate it up. Do you know one of the women from The View, one of the hosts, was saying, I read that she said, wait a second, where did I write it? She said, I love the positive message. You know, that's the thing. Because it was such word salad, because it was really hard to understand, people who like him took from it, you know, positive things or took, you know, said it was great. And I mean, it was basically one lie after the other.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying that you'd be hard-pressed to find anything that he said that was actually true in that speech, and it was unbelievably divisive. I heard somebody on CNN observe that in their 36, 37 years of watching these things, they'd never seen something like this that was so divisive. A campaign speech is what it was, rah, rah, and it was very, you know, this is the problem, is that I can sit here and make fun of it all day long, but at the end of the day, it was actually very dangerous. And it was very scary, but of course it's a buffoon who is up there saying it.
Yes. I mean, you know, yes, we can pick it apart, you know, as a psychiatrist or whatever, you know, describe these things. But at the end of the day, you know, what it really means is that these are very scary times, and they are getting scarier because he's being diminished more, you know, his capacity to think is getting more diminished. And then we have the terrorists who are getting more active, you know, coming across the border, coming already here from Afghanistan, the 80,000 that he brought here. Not all of them were good for our troops. You know, they certainly weren't vetted. And there are terrorists from that group. So, you know, we are on, you know, I think everybody should really live their life and have the most enjoyment. I don't mean not go to work, but I mean get the most out of each day, because I think we're heading for a storm.
Yeah, we are. Well, I'll kind of end with this, Doctor. There was a moment, and I didn't send the clip over, but it was a hot mic moment. So after the speech, he was talking to a few people, and he was saying that he and, you know, BB are going to have a, you know, come to Jesus moment soon. And his handler comes over and informs him that, actually, you're on a hot mic, Joe. And the fact that he doesn't know that, he's still on a hot mic. I mean, these are things, too, that are signs that this guy's just not with it, because that's a normal situation. You know you're in that environment. And it was very much just like some strange cocktail party. This was not, it was a really bizarre State of the Union address, I've got to say, the whole energy.
Yes. And you know what else? Jill, it was something strange was happening with Jill. You know, normally she wears clothes that bring some attention to her. Last night she was wearing, either it was gray or green, I couldn't tell, but it was very pale. And she was kind of in the audience amongst people. I mean, she was, it seemed like she wanted to to crawl into the woodwork. Like she didn't want to be stand out like she usually does.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. She did just make herself more or less invisible this time. And I noticed the opposing, you know, the first lady and the first man or whatever, all those second husband, they weren't making out like they did last time either. So,
right.
But anyway, doctor, tell everybody where they can find you. Where would you direct them to find out more about you?
Well, the best place is my website, terroristtherapist.com. And I'm glad you brought up, you know, Israel and Biden's plans, because that is where it's going to first start. That is where we are. I mean, I'm devastated with what he really thinks and what Obama really thinks about Israel and how that's going to play out.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Well, thank you, doctor. And actually, we're going to address that next. So I can't wait to have you back on. Dr. Carol Lieberman, everyone.
Thank you so much.
She's great. I love her. So actually, but with that, let's move on to this. First, let's take a short break, actually, and then we'll come back and address some comments that were made that should concern everyone about the U.S.'s enhanced role now in helping the Hamas terrorists in Gaza.
Hi, neighbor. Pat Boone here. Today, I want to help you find some peace of mind concerning your money. Like it or not, we're all living in a financial war zone. That's right. We're watching our hard-earned dollars get crushed by inflation. In fact, recently inflation reached its highest level in 40 years. And on top of that, cash, which has always represented freedom and privacy, is more and more being replaced by a cashless system. That's right. Powerful forces are definitely waging a war against cash. So, I'm encouraging you to prepare before it's too late. Call or text the number on the screen for a free report, The Secret War on Cash from Swiss America. Discover how a few simple steps can protect your money as well as your privacy and your peace of mind. So call or text for your free report, The Secret War on Cash, and make sure to mention Pat Boone sent you.
And we are back. So I want to cue up cut 8 here. This is one of the most alarming things that Joe Biden admitted in the State of the Union address. He broke this news. Unbeknownst to Americans, this is where we are now heading in terms of the conflict between Israel and the terrorists Hamas. Play cut 8.
The United States has been leading international efforts to get more humanitarian assistance to Gaza. Tonight, I'm directing the U.S. military to lead an emergency mission to establish a temporary pier in the Mediterranean on the coast of Gaza that can receive large shipments carrying food, water, medicine, and temporary shelters. No U.S. boots will be on the ground
A temporary pier will enable a massive increase in the amount of humanitarian assistance getting into Gaza every day. And Israel must do its part.
And Israel must do its part. You can see that Joe Biden has completely bent the knee to the most radical elements of the Democrat Party, the pro-Hamas, anti-Israel advocates in this country, those people who are educated at Harvard, for example, people who are protesting in favor of Hamas, claiming that Israel is responsible for war crimes. I mean, it's just, I mean, he says, I mean, so there's so much to get into with what he says there. I mean, there's going to be no boots on the ground, except, of course, those boots that are going to have to be on the ground to build this pier, apparently. And also, why the bleep, I'm very serious, why the bleep would the U.S. ramp up efforts to provide humanitarian relief to Palestinians in Gaza when Hamas has yet to release the hostages or lay down arms? If we were actually serious about ending this conflict, we would not provide any humanitarian relief to the individuals who elected Hamas to run their government. We should be forcing the Palestinians to rise up against their own government, Hamas, and demand a ceasefire and demand the release of hostages. Instead, we're going to go in there and prop up these citizens who are being oppressed by Hamas and who have, honestly, a deep hatred of Jews themselves. I mean, this is what people don't understand. The Palestinians, if you will, overwhelmingly hate the Jews. It's no different than what many Americans believe about their own country here today because of indoctrination. They are taught at a young age to hate Jews. Jews are the great oppressors. It's like critical race theory. Oh, you're black? Okay, well, you're oppressed because of your skin color. You're white? Oh, you're an oppressor. Yep, it's just, this is the way it is. But this is what they do there as well. And just from even a pragmatic position, you don't go in and provide humanitarian relief to people when Hamas, their own government, continues to hold these hostages, kill these hostages, and ramp up efforts. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. So now we're going to go, I mean, why? Why are we doing it? And I told you about that hot mic moment. Oh, me and BB are going to have a come to Jesus moment. And by the way, you know, this is the thing. It's worth comparing Israel and Ukraine because Biden's foreign policy, no shock, makes zero sense. No sense whatsoever. With Ukraine, it's what? It's just unfettered support. No limits, no restrictions. We've just got to give Ukraine anything it needs to defeat Russia. We're not going in there and saying, you guys need to have a ceasefire. Ukraine needs to stop attacking this territory. You know, remember he had Lindsey Graham on that moment. He went to Kyiv. And he basically said, this is the best money we've ever spent. And then he went on to say, basically praise the fact that Russians were being killed because of our efforts to help Ukraine. And here, when it comes to Israel, who was, I mean, look, it's not a perfect comparison because this Ukraine-Russia thing's a proxy war. It's ridiculous. Ukraine's already lost. And it should have ended a long time ago. The reason we're involved there and want this to keep going has nothing to do with virtue. It has to do with a bunch of crooked, corrupt politicians and the way Ukraine's basically like Puerto Rico for the United States. They've got their own vested interests in Ukraine. And what happens and the money that's going to be spent and the money they're going to make when they get to rebuild it. That's what that's about. And there's other reasons too. So that aside though, okay, Russia invades Ukraine and it's our obligation and duty to support Ukraine with arms and munitions until they defeat Moscow. Israel had 1,000 innocent civilians slaughtered when Hamas terrorists paraglided down into a music festival. And then they captured a bunch of hostages, including Americans. And The U.S. response isn't, hey, we've got to give Israel everything and anything they need to defeat Hamas, who came in, invaded, and slaughtered innocent Jews. So can someone in the Biden administration please explain to me the difference in their opinion? Are we providing humanitarian relief to Russians? Just asking these questions. But anyway, cue up cut 7. This is Joe Biden promising to ban assault weapons. Go ahead.
My predecessor told the NRA he's proud he did nothing on guns when he was president. Oof. After another shooting in Iowa recently, he said, when asked what to do about it, he said, just get over it. There's his quote, just get over it. I say, stop it. Stop it, stop it, stop it. I'm proud we beat the NRA when I signed most significant gun safety law in nearly 30 years because of this Congress. We now must beat the NRA again. I'm demanding a ban on assault weapons and high capacity. Pass universal background checks. None of this. None of this. I taught the Second Amendment for 12 years. None of this violates the Second Amendment or vilifies responsible gun owners.
Well, that's one of, 40 lies that were told in that State of the Union address. I mean, firstly, he's not a constitutional lawyer. He never taught constitutional law. He's not an expert on any of this. But you notice that he vilifies and demonizes everyone but those responsible for the problems in the first place. So it's the NRA's fault. It's gun manufacturers' fault, and so on and so forth. And this is a Marxist strategy. This is a Saul Alinsky strategy that you'll begin to understand more and more. And so what the Democrat Party does very effectively is, obviously, their policies are intentionally responsible for creating a crisis. And then the Democrats try and use that crisis to pursue certain ends. So, for example, the Democrats want to basically banish the Second Amendment. It's not so easy to do, so they have these different workarounds to get there. But banning assault rifles, obviously, is a big step towards achieving that end. Now, knives kill more people in the United States every year than so-called assault rifles like an AR-15. Now, assault rifle is just a generic term. They can put anything they want under that thing. But, if they were serious about saving lives, they would ban knives. They would ban, assault knives. They'd ban assault SUVs and Suburbans and so on and so forth. But they want to come after the Second Amendment because, despite the lies from the left, why do we have a Second Amendment? To protect ourselves against a tyrannical government, and also to give us the ability and right to defend ourselves and our families, to not be reliant upon some government and so on and so forth. And so the Democrats, via their policies, we didn't used to have mass shootings like we do today. Now, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like we don't have a problem in the country. We do have a problem in the country. But why? What is the root of the problem? Broken families? Indoctrination in schools that teaches people that they're victims, gender ideology, CRT, all these things that teach people to be hateful, that confuse kids, and the anger and angst, that is always stirred up by Democrats and in the public education system. So that's one thing that is certainly responsible for this. We have illegals that don't have a right to be here. They're killing Americans too. If they weren't here, and the government actually did its job, those lives wouldn't be lost. But anyways, you see that the education system that the government controls is failing kids. And so, of course, there's an increase in violence. We have all these antidepressants, all these meds we're putting kids on. We are creating unstable human beings. And so guns are not the problem. It's the unstable human beings that are a problem, that are being created by all of these different things that predominantly come from government Democrat-led policies. And so you have an increase in mass shootings and so on and so forth, and it's a direct response. It's created by the Democrat Party policies over time, And so they want to get rid of guns. And so they come in and use that, even though it's their fault, to say guns are the problem. We need to seize the guns. And that's what they're doing here as well. So that was one of many, many lies. But you see, he continued to attack Trump. You heard it in that bit there, too. You know, my predecessor. So this was a campaign speech. But he says, Trump said, get over it. Biden claimed Trump told Iowans just get over it when this person died. And of course, he took that remark completely out of context. I just want you to show you what a terrible human being and liar he is, and the Democrats are, and his speechwriters. Here's the whole quote from Donald Trump. To the entire community, we love you. We pray for you. And we ask God to heal and comfort, really the whole state. We're really with you as much as anybody can be. It's a very terrible thing that happened, Trump said. It's just terrible. That's just horrible. It's so surprising to see it here, but we have to get over it. We have to move forward. To all the relatives and all the people who are devastated right now, to the point they can't breathe, they can't live, we are with you all the way. And Joe Biden went before the nation and claimed that Donald Trump didn't care and just told people flippantly, get over it. He might as well have said that about himself, though. That would have been true. Joe Biden and the Democrat Party and the media, get over it. In fact, cue up, cut. This is Janet Yellen I want to play for you. Cue up Janet Yellen. Which one is this here? Number 11. Play Janet Yellen. Get over it, Americans.
Well, what I can tell you is that the average American now has seen an increase in their wages that exceeds the increase in prices since the pandemic, and can afford the same basket of goods with $1,400 left over.
And whining about not having money and the hardship of the soaring energy costs and inflation. Shut up. You're doing fine. I'm Janet Yellen, and that's what I want you to know. I mean, just get over it. Just ignore your bills. Ignore everything else. I'm telling you, you're fine, and you should shut up and just be thankful, because Joe Biden's the greatest president in American history. Unbelievable. Remarkable, truly. Now, Mr. Producer here actually pulled this Bibi Netanyahu clip. I just want you to see this, because in plain sight, you're seeing the president of the United States bad-mouthing Bibi Netanyahu and basically acknowledging, talking openly, even in a braggadocious manner, about how he's going to tell Bibi Netanyahu what's what. He's going to give him the business. You guys might have had 1,000 Jews slaughtered in this terrorist attack, but I'm going to sit you down and I'm going to tell you to stop it. Go ahead, play that cut.
Don't worry, Mr.
This is one of the big
great speeches. Really nice. I was telling the secretary, you know, I was in Jordan and Israel this weekend, and this, you know, you got to keep pushing what you're doing on the humanitarian stuff and all this stuff. So
I told him, baby, show me pieces. I said, baby, you know, I'm going to come to Jesus.
Sir, just.
It's just, we're so numb, I think, to frankly how awful the government is in the United States today. I mean, all these little things that I'm showing you, I'm very serious. Not long ago, they would have ended presidencies. The idea that you have, I mean, a Democrat party, for example, that goes on TV after the State of the Union, and they're upset with Joe Biden, not for botching the name of Lincoln Riley, calling her Lincoln Riley, the football coach, but they're upset because he didn't refer to the murderer as undocumented. I mean, this is where we are in the country, and we are fighting for our survival right now. And it's never been this bad. But I just, these people are so, they're monsters. They're absolutely monsters. Cue up cut six. I want you to hear this too. This is a lie, and I want to spend a couple minutes on this at least. About the economy. Biden, I'm a capitalist. And then he goes on, of course, to explain that he's not. He's a Marxist. But play cut. Play that cut.
I'm a capitalist. If you want to make or can make a million or millions of bucks, that's great. Just pay your fair share in taxes. A fair tax code is how we invest things to make this country great. Healthcare, education, defense, and so much more. But here's the deal. The last administration enacted a $2 trillion tax cut. Overwhelmingly benefit the top 1%.
Everything he said was a lie. Now, I understand that for Democrats, economics is not something that is understood at all. I would ask you a question. What American citizen has ever gotten rich because you took more money from Bill Gates? Or you took more money from Elon Musk or someone else? The government gets richer. No American citizen actually benefits from taxation. And you know what? Actually, I am going to invent a term right now. I'm going to call, you know, Biden likes to talk about this trickle-down economics that they attribute to Reagan. We have Biden's trickle-down taxation. Remember that phrase, Biden's trickle-down taxation. So he would have you believe that somehow other Americans benefit from taxing someone in a higher tax bracket than they do. That somehow by stealing more money from someone else makes you richer. But you see, when you tax anyone, it trickles down and it negatively impacts everyone. So when you raise the corporate tax rate, that's going to end up affecting the worker. That's going to end up getting passed on to the consumer. That's just the immutable laws of economics that none of these people wants to acknowledge. And of course, he lies about Donald Trump's tax cuts. I mean, I actually went back and found this story from The Hill. Justin Haskins wrote this from 2021, actually. And he talks about how a careful analysis of the IRS tax data regarding Trump's tax cuts shows that filers with an adjusted gross income of $15,000 to $50,000 enjoyed an average tax cut of 16% to 26% in 2018, the first year Republicans' Tax Cuts and Jobs Act went into effect. So he goes on, he points out that everyone benefited from the tax cut. Now, here's the thing. We do not have a problem in America with not taxing enough. The problem is we have a government that spends too much. No matter how much money the federal government takes, steals from the American taxpayer, they spend more. And I had this other piece here that points out that, you know, Biden falsely claims that he's gotten the deficit down. Biden's lowest deficit was $1.375 trillion in 2022. Yet he somehow managed to tout this enormous number then. We're on track to reduce it by the end of September by another $1 trillion, blah, blah, blah. Well, his previous deficit the year before in 2021 was $2.775 trillion. So the point is, Joe Biden, the only time he so-called brought the deficit down was when he brought it down from pre-pandemic spending. But even that said, Biden will have rung up $7.4 trillion in deficits in just 4 years. Unbelievable. So Biden's tremendous deficits flow from his historic spending. No administration in America's history ever spent $5 trillion in a year. Until Biden's. Ironically, neither has Biden's, because it has never spent less than $6 trillion in a year. And of course, the left does say, you know, the deficits aren't the fault of his profligate spending, but because America has not been taxed enough. So, I mean, it's an outright lie about the deficit, and these people just want to take more and more money from you. And the more money you take from the private sector, the less wealth creation can be created as a result. And if we actually implemented the policies that Joe Biden spouted last night, we would continue to suffer and actually experience stagflation. We've been here before, 1980s with Ronald Reagan. And even back then, the New York Times praised what he did. All the economists said, oh, this can never work. And what Ronald Reagan did was viewed as a miracle. So we know what to do. And Joe Biden's policies are the antithesis of those policies, as a matter of fact. Now, look, I want to be fair. I want to get into something here. You know, I think I might have missed a couple things. I didn't miss things with Biden, but I'm just choosing. I mean, he said that our economy is the envy of the world. It's just baloney, all of it. But we had a response, right, to this address, to Biden's address, and it was delivered by Katie Britt, a senator from Alabama. And I'm just going to be honest. It was horrendous. It was horrendous. It was actually embarrassing. And I'm not trying to hate on Katie Britt. I'm not trying to hate on Katie Britt, but it was really bad. Now, in the grand scheme, it won't matter. It'll just be forgotten. It didn't hurt us in the long term, per se. But I can't comprehend how this could be the best that we could deliver. But I'll play that in a second. But first, let's take one more break, and then we'll cover that.
Joining me at the news desk now is Rebecca Walzer of WalzerWealth.com. She has been a regular guest on my TV show, Brennan House Live, for a long time. She's not just an economics expert, but she's an attorney. Rebecca, you have a large firm. How many people work for your firm?
Just about 30, yes.
30. And yes. Tell me, how can people prepare for what's coming with the end of the dollar as we know it?
The end of the fiat system as we know it globally. We are moving to hard asset-backed currencies again, thank the Lord, because fiat is where we get into all the problems. When you have debt-based currency, you have debt-based problems. And the United States, unfortunately, since 2020, has not stopped spending at pandemic levels. This is systemic, and it is unsustainable, and it is coming to an end, especially with the addition of Saudi Arabia and the UAE to the BRICS nations. This is what controls our petrodollar. This is the threat immediately in 2024.
For more information, WalzerWealth.com. WalzerWealth.com. She is not your traditional financial planner. Find out why at WalzerWealth.com.
Now, maybe this is relevant or not. I think it makes this more interesting coming from me. So in my previous life, I was an actor, a trained actor, a thespian, if you will. I went to Pepperdine and actually had an acting scholarship. I studied theater in New York. I did a lot of theater. I performed in the Edinburgh Fringe Festival twice, theater. And then I did some TV and film as well before ultimately abandoning that life. And I just have to say that this overly dramatic performance that was given by Katie Britt in response was just, it didn't do us any good. And I honestly don't understand what the process is like. I need to look into this, I guess, for selecting who's going to give the rebuttal. Because it could have actually moved the needle for us, but instead we got this dud delivered. So go ahead and play cut 14 so people know what I'm talking about. This is Katie Britt delivering her rebuttal. Nice person, I'm sure. Not trying to attack her in a personal way, but this is a really pathetic response.
This is the United States of America, and it is past time, in my opinion, that we start acting like it. President Biden's border policies are a disgrace. This crisis is despicable. And the truth is, it is almost entirely preventable. From fentanyl poisonings.
You understand, right? The over-dramatization of it all. I mean, just deliver it like I'm delivering. Now, I understand. Look, these people are senators. They're elected officials. Their wheelhouse, in terms of skill set, isn't necessarily what I have to offer, which is being a communicator. Clearly. She wasn't prepared for that. And she's in her kitchen and whatever else. I mean, even as a publicist as well, I got to say, like, there's no energy in there. She's in a vacuum. And, you know, she's just not trained to deliver some kind of teleprompter address of her own yet. But there are plenty of people, whether it's J.D. Vance or, I mean, you name it. There are a lot of people that could have delivered this and done a good job. But I mean, look, it did remind me of this Alyssa Milano. She used to do those UNICEF commercials. Cue up cut 13. I mean, this is what Katie Britt reminded me. And of course, again, it's not good. Play Alyssa Milano. It feels like Britt was impersonating her.
If any of us were directly faced with a hungry child crying out for help, we would do whatever it takes to help that child. We would, because it's what our hearts tell us to do. And we would because we know it just isn't right for any child to suffer like this.
You know, it is what it is. You see it. I don't need to comment too much on it, but, you know, it's just like, that's really the best we could do with the rebuttal. I don't get it. I don't get it. I mean, I don't know how that was approved. I don't get it. It's almost like sabotage. It feels like sabotage. I'm not saying there's some conspiracy, although the Republicans are good saboteurs, but, you know, whatever. I'll let it go. You know, I don't want to beat up on Katie Britt too much. You know, I kind of want to adopt the Reagan rule here in this election season where we don't do a circular firing squad on our own. And that's not my intention. I'm not attacking her based on policy or anything else, but you know, we just got to face the facts. I don't want to be a Democrat, some lib leftist like Joe Scarborough, who says, oh yes, this was an amazing speech. Man, we can't do that. It doesn't do us any good. As a matter of fact, cue up cut 10 Scarborough. This was his comment on Biden's speech afterwards.
It was his best speech of his presidency by far.
By far.
Strongest speech. And most importantly, for people that were thinking, oh, he's too old, he's too this, he's too that. Man, he like I said, he gave a lot more than he got and made these Republicans look like fools time and time again.
Yeah, so I guess I could take the Joe Scarborough approach and say, Senator Katie Britt of Alabama, I mean, she delivered knocked it out of the park with her speech. I mean, she destroyed Joe Biden, the Democrat Party's most effective rebuttal ever given by any Republican, and it is going to ensure that we win the election in 2024. I mean, I guess I could say that, but I'm not a fraud like Joe Scarborough. Joe Scarborough, you have to remember, he is the leader of propaganda right now because he and Joe Biden apparently had this cozy relationship going on. Apparently, Joe Biden watches Joe Scarborough religiously in the morning. I guess that's his one activity of the day. You know, he watches Joe Scarborough. And so Joe Scarborough has to tell Joe Biden what Joe Biden wants to hear so Joe Biden can have a good day and perhaps remember that he is the president of the United States. President, right? All right, well, let's kind of end with this here. Merrick Garland said something very disturbing in Selma, Alabama. And what you're going to learn is this administration, the DOJ, which is supposed to be nonpartisan, is actually engaged in an effort to steal the 2024 election. That's no malarkey. Play cut 5. Go.
The right to vote is still under attack. And that is why the Justice Department is fighting back. That is why one of the first things I did when I came into office was to double the size of the voting section of the Civil Rights Division. That is why we are challenging efforts by states and jurisdictions to implement discriminatory, burdensome, and unnecessary restrictions on access to the ballot, including those related to mail-in voting, the use of drop boxes, and voter ID requirements. That is why we are working to block the adoption of discriminatory redistricting plans that dilute the vote of black voters and other voters of color.
So there you have the head of the DOJ, Merrick Garland, talking about how his department is going after who? Republican states who want to do what? Ensure free and fair elections. Now, the Democrats, and it's so disgusting too, because what is he doing? He's there in Selma. He's talking to black Americans as if the Republican Party are a bunch of racists trying to prevent them from voting. But the reality is there is no one more racist than Joe Biden, Merrick Garland, and Democrats who would claim that Republican efforts to require voter ID, for example, are attacks on black people. Because as an American citizen, you cannot drive a car. You cannot go to a hotel room. You cannot get on a plane. You cannot participate in society effectively without a driver's license. And he would say, and this is what they're saying, black people are incapable of getting driver's licenses. Every American seems to have no problem getting them, but black people, this is hard for them. They just can't do it. That's how stupid blacks are. No driver's licenses. They can't get it. They don't know how. I guess they don't know how to get bank accounts. They don't know how to fly on planes. They don't know how to drive automobiles. They don't drive automobiles, apparently. I mean, this is how sick these people are. But you have him who is weaponizing the DOJ now to benefit Democrats in elections. I mean, our country has totally been hijacked, and the government is not supposed to be used to alter elections, ensure results for one political party. And this is what they're doing. Democrats can't win without cheating. I want to make myself clear. I think after last episode, I was pretty clear about where I stand on 2020 and what they're doing in 2024. It's again, let's see, March 8th, 2024, Anno Domini, and the Democrats still stole the 2020 election, and they are desperately trying to figure out how to get the fix in 2024. They need mail-in ballots. This is a system that they rely upon. And I just saw a poll or a study or I guess it was a poll that showed the black shift to Trump is massive, like up to over 20%. And historically, Democrats can't win elections without the black vote. And this is why you have welfare. This is why you have the pandering to blacks, is because the Democrats, before the illegal invasion that they're now using to replace blacks, actually, that's their plan going forward. Before that, they learned after Herbert Hoover was defeated by FDR, the Democrats finally got a majority of black votes. And they then, their entire strategy for winning elections depended upon getting a majority of the black vote. And so Democrats, for decades, have depended upon basically getting all of the black vote to win elections. So if they lose black voters, they can't win. So this is absolutely disgusting that they're doing this. But you need to pay attention to this, because this is something that's been on my radar and should be on your radar as well. But anyway, this is Drew Allen, your millennial minister of truth. It's been an amazing Saturday with you. God bless you all. And until next time.